It's that time. We should get started here. We are not at quorum yet, but we will begin taking a look at House File 1179. All of you should have a delete everything in front of you. And Representative Mariani, would you like to move the bill?
Well, Mr. Chair, I don't think we can right now, but I can.
Oh, yes, you cannot.
Well, the chair says I can.
Yeah. No, you cannot.
Yeah. It's all about the chair. I'll give a heads up to the members who are here, because that way you'll have this great advantage. The chair has brought a little prize that's sitting in front of my name tag up there, and the prize goes to the first member of the committee that can find the unusual looking mark inside the delete all amendment. And I was trying to think whether or not we should exclude Representative Obermueller from that.
Yeah. Unfair advantage.
There is an interesting looking mark in the bill, and the first or the delete all, the first person to find it can help himself to a wonderful rhubarb tarts from Dunn Brothers. And it's not a mistake. This is called distraction, Mr. Chair. We'll get through this really quick.
Okay. We use it every day.
Yeah, you bet. This chair members, what we'll do is we'll walk through quickly. I've asked this question to help me with it. There's lots of provisions in here, and I'm not going to pretend to be able to recall them all at 8:40 in the morning for you. So it's the chair's attention then to also delete all amendment. We're taking the department out of the policy bill as the vehicle for constructing this committee's policy bill that will then move on to the finance committee, and our intent there is to have that possibly meet other provisions and become part of the policy article for the big omnibus finance bill. The lead all before you, for the most part, members keep the integrity of the department's bill as presented. There are provisions that it took out, most notably, right off the bat, most notably are the charter provisions. And so that's why it's not as big. Because, as you all know, we had moved after extensive debate the charter bill through here. That was probably about 90% what the department had anyway. And it's gone through several amendments, and so both here and in Capeville Finance. And so I wanted to not revisit that issue in terms of moving this on to the bill forward. There are some department languages that we offer what is, in our opinion, better language. Some clarification issues, perhaps in some cases a slightly different tack. And then, as I mentioned, there are some pieces that we totally excluded. And we'll try to make sure that we're real transparent about that. And hopefully this time the department can come forward and share with us any concerns that they have regarding what we've done with their language. And then we have, as you know, we've been laying bills over for the last couple of weeks for possible inclusion. And so there are several of those that are reflected here in this delete all, but not all. So the intent would be to move through today with the delete all amendment, have that sit and percolate out there for both the public and the members, and then tomorrow we'll come back and offer further amendments to the delete all from members. And then my intent would be to move the bill out tomorrow to K-12 Finance. We may spill over into the evening to do that. I hope not, but we do have the evening reserved tomorrow evening to finalize that work. And then the intent would be on Friday to do a little mopping up of some other bills just to make sure that they're going to meet bill deadlines. And by the way, we will be meeting next week. There is a second bill deadline, as you know. There may be a couple of bills that have moved in the Senate that we might want to move next week, and then whatever other little cleanup work that we want to do. So, Mr. Chair and members, with that.
And before we go ahead, I would like to say that we are at quorum, so we will officially call this to order. And Representative Norris, did you have a question towards the...
I did. I just have a question.
Go ahead. Yeah.
It has nothing to do with the bill.
Okay.
Is it line 1.23?
Well, that's not a bad guess, but it's not line 1.... What was that?
1.23.
No, although that was pretty close.
That is an awkward mark, not a weird one. Yeah. So we're going to have to... We're
all right.
Very good call.
All right. Just it was a try.
Absolutely.
It was a really good try, Mr. Chair. We'll see how it goes. We haven't coordinated this, so we're not quite sure how this is going to proceed.
You can move it as well.
Yes, I would move House File Number 1179 be recommended to pass. I refer to the Finance Committee for re-referral to the K-12 Finance Committee. And then, Mr. Chair, with that motion formally before us, then I would move the DE2 amendment be recommended to pass. I will move the DE2 amendment. This is a delete everything amendment, as I explained earlier. Put the bill in the shape that the author or the chair wants it to be, and then we'll walk through it.
All right. Representative Mariani moves the 1179 delete everything, the DE2 amendment. All those in favor, please say aye.
Aye.
Those opposed, same sign. The motion prevails.
Mr. Chair, members, the department did walk through its bill on Friday, so some of this may be repetitive. We'll try to move quickly, particularly for those parts that have not changed. Article 1, Section 1, pertains to the permanent school trust fund, and this is the language that comes from the department. Article 1, Section 2, relates to school calendar issues. This is also from the department. Section 3 is also from the MDE policy bill. Section 5 is also from the department. Section 6 is also department language that we heard on Friday. Section 7 relates to this relates to my bill, House File 1538, was that the number? Okay, 1538, the innovation revenue section. This would increase the district's basic revenue by an unspecified amount. Section 8 is department language, is that correct? And so Section 9, Section 10, the building lease language from the Department of Education. Did we do a change to this? Oh, yes. Section 10 does originally come from the Department of Education. We took out language here dealing with desegregation. Did we do the melting? All right. The chair had some initial concern with the way the language was brought in by the department. It's kind of involved, but you know, we were trying to use language that would be moderate language relative to evolving U.S. Supreme Court constitutional interpretations related to racially identified schools. We worked with Mr. Tom Melcher on that language, and we're told that the language we have here, while it differs from the department's language, is that work for their intent. It has the same effect. Section 11 is department language. We're now into Article 2. I should say, Mr. Chair, members, we do have some folks in the audience here on some of the bills, particularly some that are going to look different than bills that have been laid over. You know, for instance, the special ed bills, you know, are continuing to be worked out. You know, desire to have a agreements and a collaborative process, and so there is some new language here. And we will try to identify where that is and then just sort of slow down enough so that members understand what that is, because that'd be your first time looking at that. And then there may be resource people here in the public that can then help clarify and answer questions for members. So all that by way of saying that the church certainly invite members to weigh in at any time with questions. Article 2, Section 1, is amended from the MDE policy bill. What did we do here? Oh, yeah. Yes, we took their world language proficiency certificate idea and we inserted it into existing statutes. And that statute, and Ms. Foster can help me here, had to do with a provision that we had, we're trying to tie it to a provision that we had moved a couple of years earlier where we had asked the department to develop a process by which we acknowledge the language competency of many of our students who don't speak English but who are quite competent in their first and native languages. Section 2 is from the department. Section 3 is from my innovation bill. Section 4 is department language related to AP training programs. Section 5 is from Representative Briner's bill on multiple measures. And I may ask Representative Briner for some help here as we go through the year. Oh, okay, so Representative Briner is here. Representative Briner, what would be most helpful, I think, is to identify for for the other members those new provisions, and there are some new provisions on page 13 relative to Representative Briner's bill.
Representative Briner.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, Representative Mariani. We have made two changes to our bill since it was heard here last Tuesday. On page 13, we've added subdivision 10 and subdivision 11, lines 13.21 through lines 13.31. So a definition of proficiency and a description of growth and progress toward proficiency in the model. And I'll just give you a little background there. Some concerns were raised by the business partnership that we had only discussed the three levels of growth and hadn't talked about the role of meeting or not meeting proficiency, which is a definite part of the model as you view it on the website. And so we worked with the department to come up with these. The first, the definition of proficiency, which is in subdivision 10. It's the first line. It's students who scored at or above meet standards on the statewide assessment. So that's clarified, and then we describe the six cells that occur on the model. So if there are any questions, I'd be glad to answer those. But this was a collaborative resolution of, I guess, a seeking further description of the model.
Mr. Chair, this topic, I think, calls for what could have been a potentially sticky issue, and I'm really pleased that Representative Briner and the department worked in good faith steadily to arrive at language that seems to meet the needs of both intents for the department and Representative Briner. Section 6 on page 13 is the first part having to deal with House File 1630, which is Representative Kalin's computer adaptive testing. This section, by the way, members, will get a little involved because we have several bills. Obviously, the department had custom language before us. I had some in my 501 grad bill. Representative Briner, of course, addresses assessment issues in her bill, as does Representative Kalin. So this is probably a good moment to pause and acknowledge the fine work of our staff, Lisa Larson. This was very complicated work to take three or four different provisions on a very complicated section of legislation and try to meld them harmoniously together. I can tell you, because I know I was here for part of the weekend, and Ms. Larson was probably here all weekend working on this, but I just want to acknowledge the difficult work that this involved, including constant communication with the different authors of the respective bills. So Section 6, statewide testing and reporting, and has a combination of, as I said, of these bills. On page 14, You'll see from House File 1630, Kaelin computer adaptive testing. And Representative Kaelin is here. And I know you're not a part of the committee, but Mr. Chair, I know it's a bit unorthodox. It might be good to have Representative Kaelin come and sit up here in case there are any questions, and particularly for him to identify any new things since the bill moved through here. And Representative Kaelin, you wouldn't need to sit through the whole committee because after a while we just stopped talking about such an assistant as we move through the bill. Let's see. And I'm trying to think how much these events would it be helpful to have a sense of that or just call through. What do you think it's going to be? Yeah, and maybe just identify what would be the new. We don't need to revisit your bill as much as identify what the new.
Representative Kaelin.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, for accommodating a little bit of unusual approach here. The bill, as we discussed, House File 1630, after the adopting the DE amendment last week, had computer adaptive assessments for reading, science, and math. We have, since, as you'll see at the top of page 14, dropped the science and gone along with the department's proposal for computer adaptive math tests and added the reading portion of the department's language. If you go to then I believe on page 16, lines 20 to 26, I just want to point out that department language dealing with alternative assessments, and then the heart of the changes to the bill as you saw it last week started on 16.35. I think Ms. Larson did a very fine job of really defining fully adaptive, partially adaptive, on grade level, above grade level, and below grade level. And as you look at on page 17, paragraph B, line that starts on line 22, I'll just read that paragraph because I want to make sure this is kind of the heart of the proposal. As relates to No Child Left Behind and adequate yearly progress in federal funding, the commissioner must use fully adaptive assessments to the extent no net loss of federal and state funds occurs as a result of using these assessments. If a net loss of federal and state funds were to occur, then the commissioner must use partially adaptive assessments to meet existing federal education accountability requirements. And just to clarify, Mr. Chair and members, and to thank the department for the opportunity, I think it was on Monday, to hear from folks from Oregon and Idaho who have been through this process with degrees of frustration of trying to use fully adaptive test assessments to meet the federal No Child Left Behind law. I think our lessons learned from those states and those mistakes, what Idaho is doing now, and Oregon to some extent, is having a beginning portion of the online test be standard on grade level items, and then in essence, to use Dr. Madsen's language, there's an extender that is the adaptive, fully adaptive portion. So it's two tests in one sitting, in essence. We believe that there may be changes made in D.C. that might allow us to pursue a more fully adaptive from question one, ultimately. And this language, as I think it's quite nicely drafted, will allow that flexibility. And really the holdup is the federal language, is the federal requirement. So we want to make sure we're not risking losing those funds, but getting as close to fully adaptive as we can to meet the needs of our students. Then if you look at on page 18,
Representative McFarland has a question.
Yes, thank you, Mr. Chair, and Representative Kaelin. In that section B, at what point will we know that it's going to cost more? I mean, is there a trigger point?
Mr. Chair, Representative McFarland, I think I might be able to answer that question best by pointing you to the language in the middle of page 19. That requires that the Commissioners of Education and Finance certify to the chairs of this committee and the Finance Committee and the compliments over in the Senate and to the State Auditor that that the assessments are being administered at the lowest combined total cost of the state and local schools. Now, I know that doesn't, that's part of that sort of overall overall evaluation of the overarching costs of all of the testing that we're doing. And one of the things I did not want to do, we could have gone more prescriptive from the language that we saw in House Bill 1630, or actually more deferential to the department and less prescriptive. I think the language that you asked about in page 17 actually becomes less prescriptive and defers to the department's judgment, but does allow for the legislature to suggest that we may get more by not complying if there is a, if, as the legislative auditor's report, and I think it's 2005 or 2004, I can't remember the date, spoke to about No Child Left Behind compliance.
Mr. Chair and Mr. Kalin, I guess I'm not necessarily talking about the cost. Would there be any fines by the federal government on not complying with that?
Representative Kalin?
Mr. Chair, Representative McFarland, we heard that Idaho, largely I think out of a miscommunication with a vendor and frustrations on that level, Idaho in essence was implementing the test in 2005 as I had proposed it in the DE amendment to 1630. They did lose close to $1 million in federal funds. I think the language here in paragraph C will enable the department to make that judgment and to comply, to do that balancing between complying with No Child Left Behind and making our assessments as adequately adaptive as possible. I don't want to say the word fully adaptive because we now have it as a term of art, but I hope that answers the question.
Thank you, Mr. Chair and Mr. Kent. Maybe we could talk more about it in detail later.
Representative Briner.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. More by way of a comment, if Representative Kalin will indulge me here, but I think that this actually puts us in the middle of the discussion with Washington on how we'll move on how computer adaptive tests will move forward. And I do believe the new administration is much more open to this discussion, so I think we'll see some changes, but I agree that we want to do it in a way that doesn't jeopardize their funding.
Representative Kalin.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, and I'll just add, agreed. Representative Beinart, I think that's exactly one of the key goals here. On page 18, lines 9 through 24, go to the heart of our expectation of any move to more adaptive tests, more adaptive assessment, whether it's in, we call it the MCA3 or it's a different model. Lines 18.9 to 18.20 really lay out the expectation that we want to, for our desire to wring as much information and utility out of the tests that we move to, that include making sure that student performance data as well as achievement and summary reports are available within 3 days of the assessment, that we have the growth information for each student, that the tests are able to project student achievement in later years, as well as that diagnostic information that is available to teachers and administrators to actually improve instruction, as well as to go deeper in lines 18 to 20, to go deeper to be able to even more fully improve instruction with a good bit of sophistication. Lines 18:21 to 24 is new language that I think gets to the heart of the duplicative testing question. The question between summative and formative, between looking backwards versus informing forward. We don't want to, I've learned a great deal here, where we want to make sure that we are not expecting one test to do everything if it's a matter of still pounding that square peg into the round hole. But districts are choosing to go to the extra expense of contracting with NWEA or other vendor for a more adaptive assessment that's given multiple times during the year. An ideal situation would be that the state tests to meet No Child Left Behind, to meet AYP expectations, that the district option for that formative test actually aligns perfectly with the state test. One of the things we'd like to make sure that as we look to develop the new computer adaptive test, that the district option, that we give vendors an opportunity to say whether they can or cannot provide a district option that does actually, that is essentially the second or third layer of that state test, to more fully align all the assessments that are happening in our schools. And speaking to Dr. Madsen about this idea in my office, I think it was yesterday, perhaps the day's running, he suggested the department may actually be proposing that the exact same test, that's the state test, could be administered multiple times through the year, and that you could, in essence, bank. So if you have a passing score in the fall on the state test and a computer adaptive state test, that complies with No Child Left Behind. If you do better in a winter or spring administration of that assessment, that those could be used. It's sort of like taking the SAT multiple times and using your highest score to report to school. I think there's a lot of common ground that we've established through the conversation over the last couple of weeks here, and so I'm optimistic that we'll come to final agreement that we really can make sure that we make it so that our districts can pick up a statute book, our parents can pick up a statute book and understand what we're doing with our assessments, and that we can streamline assessments across the board. I do want to, my last note in walking through my portions of this section on page 19, as we discuss the certification question of lowest combined total cost, I have asked the state auditor, I didn't get the actual language that I could send to her until last night, but I did forward it to Auditor Otto to make sure that she's comfortable being one of the recipients of that certification, and I will make sure this committee knows the response as soon as I get it. Yep. That's it. Mr. Chair, I'd also like to just, on a personal level, thank Chair Mariani and Chair Greiling for the opportunity, not serving on either education committees, but an issue that I'm passionate about and interested in, for the opportunity to work on this issue. And I want to thank the department as well for engaging so deeply and quickly with me on the issue. I think we will come to a point that that we will have some consensus and can move forward and get this into law, I hope.
Thank you, Representative Cannon. I can speak for both chairs by saying you're welcome.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, and thank you, Representative Kalin. Representative Kalin came into the legislature a few years ago with this interest. It was not assigned, unfortunately, to the Education Committee, but obviously continued to carry this interest forward, and we've greatly benefited from his energy and expertise in this area and his willingness to work collaboratively with others. Mr. Chair, members, just back on 15, I wanted to note on lines 24 forward that this has to do with the my grad bill, and I think what we did we start the reading from here? We did. Okay. I had inadvertently included in that language the reading grad, and so we strike that out and just leave the issue to the math grad, which is the subject of our discussion. There are some concerns, with the reading math, but the reading grad. But the I think the acute issue we were trying to address was the potential large scale saving related, particularly to the math grad.
Representative Dietrich.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Representative Mariani, could you tell me what passing score means? And I'm on page 15, line 28, complete with a passing score. Or, most school districts do A, B, C, D. Does a D qualify for a passing score?
Mr. Mr. Chair, members, it's a good question. I assume that the locals would determine what a passing score is for their courses.
Okay.
Yeah. So on line 29, by the school board, would I guess infer that'd be the case.
Representative Dietrich?
Just a quick follow-up. Just something to think about is, do we have an issue with some school districts calling D a passing score and some school districts calling C a passing score? Just a thought that just occurred to me when I was working with my children last night. Mm-hmm. Thank you.
I think Representative Briner has something
to say. D a passing score.
Representative Briner?
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Representative Dietrich, this is actually an ongoing discussion among school boards, and it is an issue of local control, and there is difference. So you've hit on an issue, but I think there's a history there that you might want to investigate before determining a point of view.
Okay. Representative Demmer.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Well, I just... you know, I'm interested in hearing more about this, and I know we're getting to about, level three or four here in this session. I have concerns about, I just have this general feeling, Representative Mariani and members, that we are trying to find ways to lower our expectations so that more people pass. You know, we're doing away with the requirement for people to pass an exam for graduation, so we don't seem to think we're getting there fast enough, so we're lowering all the requirements. We're doing away in this proposal, and Representative Kalin's, and I'm still digesting this, we're going to what we think is in for simplicity or for something toward testing that kind of is do-all. We're going to both help the teachers understand where kids are at and also trying to assess school districts where they're at with one examination type of thing, and it's going to be implemented in a year or whatever. I'm just struggling with the direction that we're going here overall, Representative Mariani. I feel like we're lowering our expectations. We're gonna let local school districts decide, requirements for graduation, basically by saying if they pass based on what we think is a passing grade, you're gonna get a diploma, and we're gonna lose consistency. There's gonna be and maybe we want to go this way. Maybe a diploma in one school district in the state of Minnesota should mean more than a diploma in a school district in another part of Minnesota, because people happen to know that the requirements of one school district is way lower to get a diploma than someplace else if we go totally local. I'm concerned about that direction. And if we decide to go that way, then I guess what we start doing is maybe we have private organizations out there rating school districts based on what their diploma means. And maybe we have colleges then deciding on and admitting students based on somebody getting a diploma from school district A versus school district B. Well, it means more in one because they have high expectations than another, because it's all locally developed standards. I'm concerned about that. And then we have colleges nationwide looking at Minnesota and saying, well, you know, they have these testing things, but you don't have to pass anything. As long as you put your time in, you're going to get a diploma in Minnesota. State B, for example, there they have to demonstrate a certain level of expectation, a certain level of achievement. So are we doing our kids any favors by doing this? And that's a general comment. I'm still open. I'm still digesting this. But it's a concern I just simply have to share as we go this direction. And Representative Mariani, and I know your heart's in the right place. I know what we're trying to do here is be better. But I'm not sure by lowering your expectations of both teachers, school districts, and students is the right direction. And that's the sense that I get right now for what we're doing here.
Mr. Chair, members.
Representative Mariani.
Obviously, this is still to the nature of our ongoing discussion about this attempt on our part to address what I think is a... and a number of us think is a false way, unrealistic way in which Minnesota has chosen to assess accomplishments of our students and then attaching those to some very real-life expectations. I was thinking about this the other day, and I thought, Minnesota leads the nation in high school graduation rates. We're either one or two consistently. I don't know what happens to our high school graduation rate if the worst that data the projecting, reasonable data is projecting to us what happened in regards to the math grad test. I suspect strongly we would no longer lead the nation in high school graduation rates. I think we would probably plummet pretty quickly. I wrestle with what you wrestle with. I think we want to do no harm in terms of creating any kind of unintended consequences that, in fact, would lower expectations and lower standards. But two things I want you to keep in mind. First of all, you know, this provision, this bill, is not meant to be a permanent solution to responding to that potential, massive failure of our system next year. And hopefully it won't be that, but this is meant to be for a period of time. And then during that period of time, it would be our expectation, certainly the expectation of the governor, Department of Education, I've had this conversation with the governor, to attempt to find a better way that still upholds high standards and high expectations, but gets us away from some of the inherent failures when you take a single instrument in a flawed manner and attach it to a high-stakes consequence as we've chosen to do with the grad test. So for me, I'm more intrigued by our possibility to build a better, more realistic, more empowering assessment instrument than the simplistic, or what I would argue is the simplistic instrument of using one test in time that's meant to measure a math proficiency collectively over, you know, 3 or 4 years of coursework, and then attach that to a very real, very serious real consequences to students about whether or not they'll be able to continue their education at all or not. As you know, the department has been exploring aggressively some end of course rubrics as a possibility to deal with this issue. I think that holds much promise. As you heard from Representative Kaelin, we're also looking at a new generation of testing that could serve multiple purposes for us, diagnostic as well as some of the purposes that might be able to address this issue more effectively. So it's not an insignificant issue that you raised at all. I mean, this really does come to the heart of who we are as a people in terms of what we expect out of our outcomes. I would just urge members to also think seriously about the possibility that there may be more than one way to be able to assess our outcomes, and there may be a better way to do that. And I think that's what we're all kind of moving forward. Obviously, this bill, the language in the bill that we pushed out and in here, doesn't have a definitive long-term solution. We do set up, as you recall, a vetting group to be able to advise us, particularly on this issue of the use of high-stakes testing, because we've never really had that discussion in this legislature. What are the pros and cons of high-stakes testing? The governor has put some kind of placeholders, if you will, in the finance stream in regards to a long-term solution. There continues to be, you know, discussion how we can get there. We had a department put on a session just a couple days ago over at the department on end of course approaches, and also we also discussed high stakes approaches. So the will is there. We are halfway through the session. I think what we need to do is to continue to move this language along and get all the parties to a point where we get to that that long-term solution. And I think I really honestly trust that we've got the right kind of people on all sides. In the executive branch and the legislative branch and both parties are going to get this thing right. But I certainly don't want to diminish this at all at this point.
Members, we do. We are on page 15 through 17 there, and we have 70 more additional pages to get through in 45 minutes. So I would like to, but I would like to note to Representative Demmer as well that your concerns and things of that nature, when you're looking at the comparisons among different districts and will that mean something different in a district, I think also has to bring forward the fact that standards are still there. There are still state standards that are being embedded within each of those classrooms, and I think we do need to recognize that. The standards are being there, and there are professionals in every single one of those classrooms that I'm talking to anyway that are saying, I'm putting the standards there. How can we fairly assess how those standards are being met? And I think those are the questions that we really need to address. Representative Mariani, or Representative Demmer?
Well, thank you, Mr. Chair, and I understand what you're saying. But again, it's about an input-based system versus an output-based system. As long as we put money into teachers and as long as we put money into testing and do the things, we're making the assumption that's good enough. And then we're saying, if you're able to pass it, that's great, but if you're not, I guess that's okay too because we have considerations. But as long as we're training teachers and as long as kids are sitting in the classroom, we're kind of making the assumption that they're getting it. And if they don't show it on a test, we're kind of saying, well, maybe you didn't get it for a reason, but we'll just assume you do and we'll pass you along. And I think that, and again, maybe what we do is we go to a system whereby we do take into consideration which school the kids come from and how they achieve in that school, depending on that school's expectations. That's a concern that I have. Input-based, with just assuming that we put money into teachers and into the classroom and into coursework and curriculum versus what are the kids showing us that they find that found out? And quite frankly, acknowledging the fact that some do it better than others. Not everybody is the same, even though all may be professional.
Representative Barnett.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I don't want to derail our whole discussion, but I feel obligated to respond to Representative Demmer on this issue. First of all, I think the range and difference among our schools is already a subject of discussion, having nothing to do with the standards issue, but having to do with whether we meet our constitutional obligation as a state to fair and equitable funding and equal education. So I think we already see a wide range of opportunity differences among our districts, and certainly one could question whether that meets our constitutional obligation. But so I think I don't think it's right or reasonable to reduce the issue of the transition to high-stakes testing to return to a system that doesn't differentiate on performance. We want high standards, we have high standards, but it's the transition to high-stakes testing that is questionable. And there is a body of research that I think supports our questioning this. But we're not saying that we won't have a solution. We're saying the discussion needs to be on the table and there are alternate scenarios to solving this and we need to engage the issue and we don't want to do it at the expense of the couple thousand students who might graduate if we do it in a precipitous fashion.
Mr. Representative Mariani.
Sure, if we can move on. And I do want to repeat the chair's challenge. It's a nice rhubarb torch sitting in front of the chair's desk. And it goes to the first member who can find the unusual. What did I say? Was it weird? I shouldn't change it.
Weird.
Weird. The weird-looking symbol in the delete all. And I'm pulling for Representative Nornis myself, but we're getting close. How's that for a clue? members, Ms. Lassen wants to point out some technical corrections quickly on page 16.
Mr. Chair, members, on page 16 on line 1, there's a mistake. Representative Newton offered up an amendment that I recall the committee adopted about what is recorded in the student's transcript with respect to the score. And my recollection is that the committee agreed that the student's score on the math grad assessments would be recorded in the transcript, but we deleted the reference to passing score. Also on page 16, line 17, the E should be an F. And my only reason in pointing this out is that this is a 90-page bill. We tried our level best to get it as correct in as correct a fashion as we could, but there are mistakes. And so if anybody finds any...
What do we get? Yeah.
My appreciation.
That's enough.
But it's just a way of saying that there are in fact and likely to be a number of errors here, although they were not intended.
Chair, Representative Kalin brought us pretty much through page 19. We then move on to page 20, where we have the effective date on line 25 that's related to the grad sunset concept, as well as the dates that apply to the Kalin bill. Section 7 is from the Brighter report card bill, which would add the multiple measures to state reporting system. Page 22 takes us to, I'm sorry. Oh, is that my line? Oh, okay. So I'm reminded that, I jumped over page 21. The top of 21 is a charge to the OEA from my bill. We then move on to page 22, section 8, which is also from the Brainerd bill, which requires systems to measure growth and rigorous course in to measure growth, rigorous course taking, and student engagement.
I believe that we have someone that would like to raise an awkward or a weird, excuse me, mark that might be on the page.
Mr. Chair and Representative Mariani, would that be on 21.20?
The winner. And I was pulling for Representative North.
Congratulations to Representative McFarland.
Can you pass the prize on to our lead Republican?
Would somebody like to explain what that symbol is?
Mr. Chair, we had that, but we're a little shy about interrupting your testimony.
I could have brought two torches. Perhaps Ms. Larson can explain why.
Ms. Larson.
Mr. Chairman, members, that's the number one stricken.
It's a one stricken.
Good.
Thank you.
Mr. Chair, members, Section 8, Senator Brainerd's bill, I already mentioned that. We then go on to page 25, Section 9, which goes over to page 26. Also from the Brainerd bill, the direct CMD to report the measures and student performance report cards. Section 10 is from the Swales bill on homeschool mandate reduction. Basically what I did is I took three provisions from the Swales bill. And quite frankly, members, I took the least controversial, in my opinion, provisions. There are issues remaining that we didn't fully vet, and that's the chair's fault when we heard the bill a few weeks ago, related to the reporting conditions that were raised by county attorneys. So this one would require parents to report immunizations to superintendents twice. So that deals with the immunization reporting. We'll see a couple more provisions as we move through related to homeschooling. The next page is Board of Teaching eligibility. This is from the Department of Ed bill, and 12 also. And then 13 is from Representative Cap bill, which proposes to focus pre-licensure on professional reflection and growth. I don't think you've amended that.
There was just one paragraph stricken. There was a listing of what evidence may include. We struck that to say that it can encompass many things that is already defined in the paragraph.
Okay, what does it say? Oh, okay. So line 29-12 would incorporate Representative Cass' proposals into the Board of Teachers relicensing requirements.
Yes.
Process. Mm-hmm. So that's new language. Okay. Section 14 is also Representative Cap's language, as is Section 15, 16, 17, and then Section 18 as well, and Section 19, Section 20 is also from Representative Cass's bill, and Section 21 is as well. Section 22 is the department languages related to the three types of alternative programs. And then we have Section 22 on page 35. We amended this. Section 23 there. We amended the LET student language. Section 23 is department language, but we unstruck the proposal to strike language regarding best practices for LET students. We thought it was, the chair thought it was good to continue to have reference to the use of best practices for LET students. Section 24, is that department language? Yes, it is. Section 25 is background check fee waived. This is the Detmer bill that we heard at the beginning of session. And it also included an amendment that was added in the Finance Committee. Section 26 is from the department's bill. And then Section 27 begins our online learning provisions. We took the Representative Dietrich language. I think it was pretty close to the department's language to begin with. I think I'm right. There have been changes made. Yeah, we amended. We made some amendments during the Dietrich bill. Also, there's new language here. Okay, all right. I need to identify where the new language is for the members. Yes, please.
Mr. Chairman, members, the online learning provisions are an amended version of a delete everything amendment that Representative Dietrich brought before the committee last Friday. There were a number of questions raised about how the proposal worked. So, for example, if you look on page 39, what Representative Dietrich has incorporated is a definition of supplemental online course syllabus. It was referenced in several places in her amendment, but it wasn't clear as to precisely what it was. So this definition incorporates, I believe, the language that was in her bill, but creates a definition out of it so that there will be uniform references throughout the online learning provision. Also, in Representative Dietrich's bill, there was language about the requirements that the enrolling district and the online provider agree that the students would receive credit in the enrolling district. But the language was silent about the results if there was not agreement. So there's a sentence added here saying that if there is not agreement, the students still may take the course and receive credit, but doesn't satisfy graduation requirements. And there were a couple of those kinds of things. There was language about recording or providing access, and it wasn't clear what the distinction was, so I think we clarified it. The idea on page 40, line 33, either that the online learning provider would in fact report, or in the alternative, provide access to information about a student's progress. So the language is meant to be consistent with her proposal, just clarification of a number of ambiguities or unanswered questions in that language. And then also from the department bill, and here's another mistake, we've included the Online Learning Advisory Council, but there was an amendment to this language that is not reflected in this document.
Mr. Chair, that takes us to line 43, page 43. Then we're in section 32, which goes over to page 44, is related to alternative programs. This is department language. We continue with department language to section 38, having to do with tribal contract schools, section 39, alternative program funding, section 40, project-based learning, section 41, Oh, this is from Representative Flail's 220 partnership bill that we passed through, and so we incorporated that in Section 41. Section 42 is another homeschool provision having to deal with driver permits, which allows the public safety to issue a permit to homeschool students whose parents certifies their training status. We then go through, that provision that takes us out to Section 45 on page 54. Which allows homeschool parents to certify students may work during the school day. So those are the three homeschool provisions. Section 46 is from Representative Briner's bill, which creates the rigorous coursework prediction model. Section 47 convenes the stakeholder group to record student engagement measures. This is also from the Briner report card bill. Section 48 is from my bill on the grab, which convenes an expert group to recommend appropriate uses of high-stakes math. So we call on the Office of Educational, on high-stakes math high school exit exams, and we call on the Office of Educational Accountability to lead that group. Page 57, Section 49 is the appropriation. An open appropriation, we'll try to work this out, obviously control finance for the OEA to do work related to the Education Research Center from my Research Center bill. And then there's a repealer in Section 50, which repeals value-added assessment program, and this is from Representative Briner's bill. Then we're at this Article 3. Which gets us into the special ed provisions. As members know, we heard two bills on Friday. Representative Dabney's bill on seclusion and restraint and Representative Newton's bill on special ed mandates. Article 3, Section 1 begins with Representative Newton's language. There is new language here, I'm told, that's based on agreement. And so what I want to do is, first, you can help me highlight what the new language is, so we can just sort of pause a second and then have a discussion about those.
Mr. Chairman, members, Representative Newton, Representative McFarland, and various stakeholders in the area of special ed have been meeting on an ongoing basis and met most recently this week to work on Representative Newton's bill. The changes are laced throughout his bill because they've been working on particular subdivisions of various sections. So there was no good way to record the changes because they were myriad, except to incorporate them into this bill. I recognize some of the stakeholders here, so if you had specific questions, they might be able to answer them. This is, as Representative Mariani said, an amalgam of what the department is proposing, Representative Dabney's bill, and Representative Newton's bill. In Section 1, you have newly agreed upon language clarifying the definition of pupil. Actually, it's under the pupil fair dismissal law, but it's to make it consistent with Chapter 125A on children with disabilities. Section 2 comes from the department. Sections 3 and 4 and 5 and 6 and 7 are from Representative Newton's bill. And they do include the changes agreed to by the various stakeholders as recently as this week. Section 8, 9, and 10 are from Representative Dabney's bill on restrictive procedures. Section 11 and 12 is a bill that you heard and passed out of committee yesterday having to do with placing children in care and treatment centers, both children with disabilities and without. Section 12 is a department proposal. Sections 11 and 13 are care and treatment, and in between is a department provision, section 12.
Mr. Chair, I'm wondering if perhaps, I know we're plowing through it mechanically, but perhaps the Representative Newton might just share quickly what the new, in layperson's term, what the new language provisions are.
Representative Newton.
Yeah, thank you, Mr. Chair, and Representative Mariani. I'd actually like to have Sue Abdul-Holden come up and explain something. A lot of it has to do with dates, you know, how much... getting a consensus as to on appeals, for example, whether we're going to have a standard 60 days or 90 days, and if not, to define it so that 60 days at the state and 90 days at the federal level, so that it just makes it easier for people in the school districts to understand what's going on. And I think one of the big things was the change from roughly age 23 to 21 that children would be in special ed. But a lot of this is just, you know, putting things that make sense together and having all the stakeholders agree to it.
Mr. Chair, I, of course, pressed for time, so I just offer it in case some members do have questions. Mm-hmm. We do have stakeholders here. Mr. Dean here is here as well as Ms. Abdul-Holden, and it might be as simple as yes, you know, this new provision, we have agreement on it.
Absolutely. If there are any questions from members, we will take those. And Representative Dabney.
My question is actually on Section 2 of Article 3, and I don't know if either chair wants to entertain that at this time or not. I'm willing to wait if there's a better moment. It's on page 57, line 26, the change in notification of parents of LEP students from 10 days to 30 days.
Mr. Chair, members, this is department language. We went over this a little bit Friday, but the department is here. We could certainly have them answer the, you know, whatever concerns or questions.
Yes, let's do that at this time. If somebody from the department would like to answer that. Ms. Barnes, you can state your name for the record and proceed.
Yes, thank you, Mr. Chair and Representatives. My name is Lisa Barnes. I'm from the Department of Ed, and I believe you're talking about the parental notification for English language programs. Actually, the state has had the 10-day parental notification timeline, but the federal requirement is 30 days. So there's been some confusions in the districts. 10, 30, which one is it? So we were just trying to align with federal requirements and change it to a 30-day so it would be consistent in both bodies.
Representative Dabney, any follow-up?
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Ms. Barnish, I can appreciate the confusion. What have districts been doing?
Ms. Barnish.
Actually, I'm sorry, I don't know. I would expect that they should be meeting a 10-day because that is the lesser of the two, but we've had lots of questions of which one it is, but they should do the 10-day since it's the lesser of the two, I would suggest.
Representative Dabney?
Mr. Chair, thank you. It strikes me as a point of concern where we often have conversations around this table about the importance of parental involvement. We also all recognize that these students are amongst our most challenged and challenging, and the department's position is let's have the parents less involved and less informed, and even compared to what apparently is practiced in most of the school districts. I guess I'm confused. I think I was in another committee on Friday when this was discussed, or I would have raised this question and concern at that time.
And I believe we have somebody else from the department that would like to make a statement on this. And while she's coming down, Representative Greiling, something to this?
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I agree with Representative Dabney. I also know that if there's logistics and if you have, I don't think that's our intention to get school districts caught in doing something illegal as much as it is to get the parents notified as soon as possible. And so I would wonder if a compromise might be as soon as possible, but but no longer than 30 days, something like that. So it's not our intention for them to wait around for 30 days, but we just, but the, you know, what I don't like about all the special ed rules is it gets so litigious, and the intention is not to get into hassles over people following the law as much as it is people should be doing the best they can with goodwill. And so I support the change, but I also would support additional language to make it clear that it's supposed to be as soon as possible. But, you know, you are in legal trouble if it's not 30 days, if it's longer than 30 days, but that it's our intention to make it as soon as possible. To me, that would, I don't know what Ms. Weber would have to say.
Yeah, Ms. Weber?
Mr. Chair, Representative Greiling, the department would be amenable to that. I think, and to your question, Representative Dabney, what the department would do is enforce the more stringent date. So if the state had a more stringent date with respect to the federal law, that is what we would require districts to do. I think some of the pushback is that the discussion that takes place about what laws do we have in place at the state level with respect to special education or anything that exceeds federal requirements with respect to mandates upon school districts. So that's where this is coming from, and that's where the department is coming from with respect to our proposed change.
Representative Dabney.
Mr. Chair, thank you. I apologize, but I'm not used to thinking of LEP education as falling under the rubric of special education generally. And I'm concerned that I'm getting confused with the language here. What I am hearing is that the common practice is best is understood is that these parents are engaged within 10 days of the child's admission to the program, that the department would enforce the 10 days, and I'm not understanding what the value is to the child's education of delaying the notification to the parent to as long as 30 days after their child has been admitted to LEP services. What is the value to the child of the delay that the department is proposing here?
Mr. Chair, Representative Dabney, we are not proposing this change with respect to any sort of value to the child. So I appreciate your comment there. Also, this does come from the requirement is under MCLB. So also to your point about special education, the 30-day requirement falls under the MCLB law. And we were just proposing it more to provide consistency as well as with respect to, as I indicated, the discussion that takes place around mandates to school districts and where state law may be more, have additional requirements beyond what's required in federal law. So this was not proposed as something to speak to the value of providing the information to parents. It was just to provide consistency, and that was where the department was coming from.
Thank you. Thank you, Mr. Chair.
Mr. Chair, members, you then go off to page 72, that takes us past the first, first of the Newton language, it gets us into the seclusion and restraint language from House Law 1621, Representative Dabney, and I don't believe there's any new language here from House Law 1621. We heard the bill on Friday, so there's nothing new to report here in terms of what's been...
Representative McFarland.
Yes, thank you, Mr. Chair. Representative Mariani and I have had discussions on this since the hearing last Friday on House File 1621. I've been talking to some people about concerns that were raised in that hearing, and I've talked to some of the stakeholders, and we're going to be meeting about some possible changes that would have more of the parties be amenable to the language.
Mr. Chair, on page 76, section 11, this was in the policy of the department bill. This was also the bill that I passed out here yesterday in regards to resident districts involved in placing students in care and treatment facilities when being placed there by non-resident districts. Page 78, section 12. It's from the department's language. There's section 13, and that's also in the care and treatment bill. Section 14 on page 81, the special ed language from Representative Newton. That's not new language, though. Is that right? Section 14. Okay, not new language. We heard this language on Friday. Section 15 is from Representative Brown's bill on resource centers for deaf hard of hearing that allows for other training programs to require data aggregation. Section 15 is part of that bill as well. Oh, yes, there is new language here, yes. Ms. Larson, please.
Ms. Larson.
Mr. Chair, members, on page 81, section 16, this is language that I prepared at the request of the Executive Director of the Council of Deaf and Hard of Hearing. She was somewhat upset that the language that came before the House Committee didn't, in fact, achieve what she requested. And so I prepared an amendment for the Senate file for her, and this is the Senate file language. It's supposed to clarify what she intended with the House language, but did not accomplish.
Mr. Chair, and members, then we go on to section 17 is the State Academy. This is from the Department language. Section 18 is also from the Department in regards to DHS administrative costs. Then we have repealers on the bottom of page 82, and members, these are related. The first three are related to Newton's bill. The second two are related to aversive and deprivation procedures and definitions in the Dabney bill. Ms. Larson.
Mr. Chairman, members, there is another error. When we reached agreement this week on language for Representative Newton's bill, we were able to put into the definition, into the bill, a new section, which is really, in some sense, a restatement of an old section of law having to do with school district obligations for providing special education services and programs to eligible children. Well, in incorporating the new section, I neglected to repeal the old section. So on 82.32, after 121A.43, and I suspect Representative Mariani will have an author's amendment tomorrow, but we'll need to include a repealer for 125A.03 because that's the section that we essentially rewrote in Representative Newton's bill.
And all the other repealers, just for committee members' information, was in your packet today. So if you want to reference any of the other repealers, they are there.
And members, I want to thank my legislative assistant, Celeste Moran, who stayed late yesterday to make sure that we had the typically revisers, my understanding is, would do this, but we had a DE2 amendment. And I thought for transparency sake for both the public and the committee, it was important for us to have both before us. So thank you to Ms. Moran for working overtime to make sure we had that before us. Members, Article 4, Section 83, page 83, Section 1 is the department language, both in Section 1 and Section 2. Article 5 is also department language that we heard on Friday, and Article 6, Section 1 is also department language, although I did add language to this provision. This relates to gifts received from governmental or non-governmental sources to the department, so, you know, grants that they may receive for their work. The language I added was to require reporting to the chairs of HR when those grants are received and what the intended purposes are. And then Article 7, is a technical correction article, and this is, I believe, all of it is from the department's bill. So that takes us to the end of the Believe All Amendment. I just want to highlight for members some things we didn't talk about. From the original bill, we did remove language the department had suggested requiring a maintenance of effort for state school levies for the cost of licensed school counselors, licensed school nurses, social workers, school psychologists, and KENDEP counselors. This was addressed in Representative Tilbury's mandate reduction bill. I did not want to create two House positions relative to this issue. We also then took out language that clarifies the statewide assessments be aligned to the standard revision cycle. So that's what we had with timing alignments. Representative Dietrich offered an amendment from K-12 Finance onto the Tilbury reduction bill that addresses that issue, basically pushes those alignments forward 1 year. Again, I did not want us to create two positions on the House on those issues, so we're going to have to deal with that issue when we get to K-12 Finance. I suspect the department may have something to say about the fact that we took that out of, at this point, out of the policy bill. Of course, I mentioned that the charter school language is out. We addressed those in the Slocum bill. Let's see. We also, the department has some language that they told that they wanted to strike in regards to the commissioner making statistical adjustments on student-level data reporting that included factors like residential instability, single-parent family status. The department, the department apparently is really struggling with this because you get into some data that either is very difficult, it doesn't exist, or there's data privacy issues. The chair noted that the language in statute, however, doesn't require reporting of the data. The language specifically says it acknowledges these factors. And so there's a lot of broad room there, and I understand what the department is struggling with, but I also think it's important for our department, for our legislature, to find ways in which we acknowledge those broad social indicators that may have a relevancy to student academic achievement. And then finally, members, I'm less knowledgeable about this. We repealed some language on conference and workshop fees. And I'm told that this language is not necessary as conference fees and gift accounts for the authority that the department is looking for already exists somewhere else in statute. So members, that's the quick version of the lead all amendment. It would be, it is the chair's intent that tomorrow this committee will then entertain amendments. Again, they could be amendments that attempt to put things back that were taken out, could be amendments to add provisions that weren't included of bills and provisions that we've heard, or simply amendments to take out provisions that the chair has put in. Hopefully, and I do apologize to the members, we worked awfully hard to try to get for the members a clean copy of the D2 amendment. We were working feverishly throughout the weekend and late into tomorrow or yesterday and tomorrow. Yeah, we will be working later for tomorrow. Late yesterday, I had our committee administrator send to members the by email the D2 amendment yesterday evening. Of course, the public has not had as much time to look at it, but hopefully this will now give us everyone a full day to look at it overnight. And we'll entertain amendments tomorrow. Hopefully we can get that done by our normal committee time. If not, we do have Thursday or tomorrow evening scheduled in order to finish the bill. It is my intent that we move the bill out one way or the other tomorrow.
Representative Demmer.
Just a quick note. I want to thank Celeste and the chair for this repealer language. I know I don't remember seeing this kind of detail in the past. That's very, very helpful because so many times we go through, especially a larger bill, and the repealer and say, what's this? And due diligence would say we'd look every one of those up, but as you know, we don't always get that done, and that's, I think, helpful so we don't have unintended consequences and accidental things. So thank you, Mr. Chair, and thank you, staff. Appreciate that.
Representative Demmer and I, Mr. Chair, have been here long enough to know that sometimes there's some serious unintended consequences with repealer language that we've really not looked at carefully.
And one last piece of business here. If Representative Loon, would you move the minutes of our March 24th meeting?
So moved, Mr. Chairman.
All in favor of approval of the minutes, please say aye.
Aye.
Those opposed, same sign. Motion prevails, and we stand adjourned.